Hello everybody, welcome back to the channel and another video. Let's play the intro because there's a bunch of guests wanting to come on and talk about everything. Yes, hello, good evening everybody, and welcome back to the channel and another video. And I'm joined by three very special guests, and England are playing at the same time right now without a striker, and I'm glad I've got three top target main men, centre forwards, to join me tonight on this show. So I'll go first. Melvin, how are you doing?
Yeah, good, thank you. Good. Looking forward to this one. This is, as I said, the best back four bar one team in England, I reckon.
And I've got... joining me, my comrade from the Purely Arsenal, Neil Shaw. How are you doing?
Oh, I'm very, very well. And thank you so much for having me on with these wonderful people, of course, including yourself, James. So thank you.
Anytime, Neil. Anytime. Like I said, if you ever want to come on here, you just ask me, mate, and we'll get you on here. And then making his debut, we've got Lee. Lee, how are you? Glad to have
I'm
you
good.
On. It was
I'm
a
good.
Pleasure meeting you a few weeks back in the flesh, finally. I know we've done a few podcasts back in the day.
We did back in the day. It was good to meet you too, James. It was a good night, wasn't it?
Roof it was.
Get together. Really enjoyed that bit. But thanks for inviting me on.
Anytime.
Brilliant. Not too bothered about missing England, I have to say.
No, to be fair, I don't think anybody is, apart from people that are obviously there. But then I think if you even give me a ticket for that, I'd still say no. So
same.
And hello everybody in the chat as well. There's Matt there. So obviously Southampton at the weekend. I know it's nearly a week away, so it's a bit of trying to relive it. But the first half, I know that's the hard bit to relive. And obviously we made quite a few changes. I know Neil and Melvin, you were there. I don't know if you were there, Lee. Were you at the game?
Yeah, I was there. I was at the game. Yeah.
Good. Yeah, so I'll go to you first because obviously me and Neil have talked about it already, so I don't want him to repeat himself if he doesn't want to. Lee, all the changes that we made, what did you think? Because a lot of people have said that needed to be done because there's players there that maybe he wants to keep them happy, you know, or, you know, he has to get them becoming, you know, better and settled into the team like a Jesus and like a Sterling. But what did you think? For me, I thought it was just a bit one too many. For me personally, and also I didn't understand having Partey, Rice and Jorginho at home against a side that's near the bottom of the table.
No, absolutely, James. Right, so I'm going to try and make this little sum up interesting because we know that first half was anything but interesting. Got better in the second, but yeah, as for the formation, yeah, you're right. Probably, I think one or two max, and I kind of think playing Partey right back and then Sterling and Jesus needs games, as does Sterling, probably overkill. And as you say, that the elephant in the room is, this is Southampton at home, and we're not playing Manchester City. I was a bit surprised. I mean, in some ways, I was surprised he even played Saka. I mean, knowing that Saka's going to get two, he always gets played 90 minutes for England, doesn't he? If ever you're going to rest Saka, maybe that was a game to rest him, but it was definitely Sterling. He tried, right, and there was a lot of energy from him, but without too much end product, and probably similar to Jesus, right? It's I was thinking about it earlier when I was out. Well, you never quite know what you're going to get. He's a jack in a box. I remember them early days. I think it was Palace away. He went on a few mazy runs, and we were all like, "Wow, what have we got here?" He seems like a player, and he's a talented footballer. He just does blow hot and cold. You never quite know what you're going to get from him. And and I mean, as you said, James, to play all three together, and especially Partey, well, we know from Fulham at home, was it last season, he's no right back. He's not a right back in a million years. So it was a bit of an odd selection, but at least we got it right in the second half and brought obviously Trossard on. Havertz up front, and we just clicked into gear, didn't we? It was almost like they scored the goal, and that was what we was waiting for. It was quite a sedate atmosphere in the stadium. Now we know what's going to happen. Teams are going to sit back, and we're going to try and knock them over, but it clearly wasn't working, the Jesus and Sterling, for all their efforts. So, yeah, an odd one, but you know, we obviously got there in the end.
Yeah. And Melvin, like Lee's saying, you know, there was a bit of huff and puff from Jesus and Sterling, obviously, but there was no end product. And Sterling, for me, I thought, actually, in terms of an attacking standpoint, other than Saka in that first half, because it was just, it's a usual pattern of just give Saka the ball, he'll find someone, he'll do something. I thought Sterling, you know, he nearly got onto the Jorginho shot. If he was just a little bit more quicker, he nearly latched onto that one. And I thought there were parts, like Lee said as well, in that first half where Sterling looked a bit more bright than Jesus would for me, Melvin. But what's your take? Because I know Neil, we mentioned it as well, and I'll come to you afterwards. But Neil was telling us, because we were on WhatsApp talking, and Neil was saying to us in the stands, he's like, God, they're not liking Jesus today. And I went, well, I'm not liking him on the telly either, Neil. So I'm like, at least it's mutual. At least I'm seeing the same as everybody in the ground seeing. But yeah, what about you, Melvin? What did you make of it?
I think there's a difference between Jesus and Sterling. I thought Sterling was the nearly there boy on the day. He just failed to get his toe to a couple of things. He just failed to get the last touch or keep his balance at the last minute. Another day, he could have had one or two. But Jesus, he made all the wrong decisions. There's one in particular where it was in the first half. We were breaking on the left-hand side, and the whole crowd was shouting, "It's behind you." No, sorry, they were all shouting, "The other side." There was Saka on the other side with 50 yards to run at with no defenders. And for some reason, he never saw him or heard the crowd. And it was a bit disappointing. You think his radar would be better than that. But apart from that, it's not happening for him at the moment. I don't think it's his injury. I think it's in the mind. I think it's a little bit, hopefully, of a Martinelli situation. Because Martinelli, every game now, is looking better and better. So I just think, hopefully, something will have to turn the corner and he get a bit of confidence. And we'll see the Jesus that we know there. Otherwise, if he doesn't do it up to Christmas. I think Arsenal might have to make a decision January's time. So Christmas comes and he's still playing this level. And someone said the other day, you've got to have someone like Jesus. It's even good to have someone like Jesus on the bench. Yeah, it's great having Jesus on the bench when he's doing it. But when he's playing like that, there's no point in bringing him on, if that makes sense. Because there's no added value at all. So let's hope it's just something that needs to click.
Yeah, he's hit and miss, Melvin, isn't he, at the moment. It's
more
miss than hit. I mean, originally he was kind of 50-50, but as you say, we're a lot more miss. And you just know there's a great footballer there, but sometimes I just think he's got his playing in his own little world. He's got his head down, right? He don't ever seem to get his head up, right? Which is strange for a pro footballer. It's always like he's beavering away and he's doing his thing. Without any awareness around him, the example from Saturday, kind of case in point, right? Where it was exactly. Obvious the whole stadium was like past the ball and just didn't see it.
And then another thing as well that I noticed with Jesus as well, and I am coming to you, Neil, I promise. is that when I obviously look after the game and I like looking at the stats and everything else like that, I try my best. I get the heat map up. And he touches the ball everywhere else apart from in the box. And Melvin, that's something that we spoke about on another podcast earlier in the season. You said to me, James, at the moment, if the ball's coming into the box, do I want Havertz, Trossard or Jay? And I'm like, yeah. And that's still how I feel. Because Neil, we had this conversation, didn't we, on the Purely. And you made a great point when you were saying that Jesus now still plays like how we played two seasons ago. But yet the rest of this team's moved on. And he's still trying to drop deep. But when he's doing that now, it's like he's almost in the way. And then everybody around him breaks. Everyone else breaks around. And then when you get to the end at the box, it's like, well, my striker's not there because he's at left back.
He's playing for himself, James. Like I said, that's the problem.
But Neil, what did... Obviously, you were there as well. And What did you make of it? And do you, I saw you nodding the whole time with Melvin. Do you think that it's a case of it's a confidence thing, or this team has genuinely outgrown him? Because I look at it and I think it's a bit of both.
It's hard to say. I mean, for us sitting here, it's very difficult. We can only go on what we see, you know, externally. It's difficult to know what's going on in his head. Maybe he's got issues, personal issues. We just don't know what it is. But what is correct is everything you guys have said. He's playing for himself and not the team. You couldn't get a more... If you look at Kai Havertz and Jesus and you put them on a scale, they're going to be as far apart as possible at the moment. Jesus is playing for the team. He's hung... Havertz is playing for the team. He's hungry. He's obviously got that desire to do well, to score. He's always... He's unselfish. And then he's selfish when he needs to be as well. He attacks the ball. He's got all of it at the moment. I mean, as I'm going to keep repeating myself until I'm blue in the face, and I already am, but he's the player of the 2024 for me. As good as Saka is, as good as all the other players are, for me, Kai Havertz is the player of 2024. Jesus is the opposite. Jesus is, as what Melvin Lee yourself have described, he's kind of very insular. He's got his head down. I think, Lee, you described it best. He's in his own little world, and he's not helping the team. He's not conducive to kind of aligning with what Arteta is trying to do, what the team's trying to do, and what is expected from the front lineup. And I'm actually going to... I know this is really harsh, but I think... I agree with you, Melvin. If it doesn't improve, he's got to go at Christmas, because I think we can't carry... We can't afford to have players like that in the team. It's become so hard. We have got three opponents, as far as I'm concerned. We've got the juggernaut that is Manchester City. Maybe Liverpool as well are in the mix this season.
Oh, yeah.
Then you've got the corruption of the Premier League anyway. And then you've got the bias of the officiating. We're up against three. Mm. So we have to be more than perfect. And I'm sorry, we haven't got time to carry players like Jesus if that's how he's going to be. He's got to improve, not in 4 weeks' time. Or after Christmas, he's got to improve next game if he's picked. But I was actually surprised that he was actually picked. To be fair, I think when you have to be cutthroat in this league, and any team can beat any team, as we know. Well, no, we were almost stung by Leicester. We obviously knew what happened against Southampton, although they're bottom of the league, so you can't take anything for granted. I think you've got to start with your strongest team if they're all fit. And I don't believe Jesus is part of that setup at the moment. I don't. So I think to appease him and to give him time just to make him feel better is the wrong strategy. I'm not saying for a minute Arteta would do that because he's very cutthroat. But I just feel that, you know, it's not the right time. And I know it sounds like I'm being horrible to Jesus at the moment. But I just, at the moment, my focus is for the best. For what I want is, like we all do, the best for the club. And if he's just going to get in the way in the forward lineup, 2 years ago, he was brilliant. Because we weren't structured. Now we're structured. Kai Havertz is the man, not him, as far as I'm concerned. And just quickly to say, I actually thought Sterling probably was the best of the front lineup in the first half. Yeah, I thought he was the most dynamic. I agree. Melvin Lee, I think he was the most dynamic. And if anything was going to come from anyone, it was going to be from Sterling. But Jesus, you got to need to tie up your shoelaces and, you know, pull your socks up and pull your finger out and start playing better.
Yeah, and that goes to my next question, and I'll start with you again, Neil. With Jesus, obviously, looking at how he is and how he's playing and everything, and I don't want to get into like really digging out a player because that's not my, you know, that's not my style. But as we always say, we say it as we see. Yeah. We saw a player in Kai Havertz that literally was on the floor, confidence-wise, mentality-wise, and I think Arteta and the team even boosted him back up. Obviously, him playing in that striker position, I think helped him. But for you, just basically going off what's on now and looking at Jesus thinking he got the number 9 shirt, which is a dream. Any Brazilian to wear number 9 after Ronaldo of my generation, you know, that's the shirt. That is the shirt. And also, you know, he's been ousted by you know, the robot at Man City, you know, the Terminator, which anyone could accept. I think most strikers will go, yeah, well, if you've got him, I'm pretty much gone. But do you think for him, he can come back from this himself and the club can bring him back from this? Or do you really think like it is time? Because for me, I look at it and go, Havertz was getting in the position. Okay, he wasn't finishing, but he was getting in the positions. He was doing, and he was working hard. And one thing I've always thought about Jesus is, bloody hell, you and I work hard, but he didn't work. He doesn't work hard for me up front anymore. I think he's a rotational wing option at best. But what say you?
I think he doesn't want to be second best. And I think as a result of that, his head has gone. Same thing as you just beautifully said. It's happened at City. We got the rope. They got the robot in, and he's like relegated, and he's going to be, I'm not going to get any chances. I don't want this. I'm moving to Arsenal, where I'm going to be the main man, which he was for a certain time. Now he's no longer the main man. He knows it. Everyone else knows it within the club knows it. And I think that has kind of stifled any desire from him to maybe try and do well at the club. If it was up to me as it stands now, I think we should be looking to maybe look at his exit, because we can't carry passengers, as I just said earlier. We haven't got the time now to carry passengers. Everyone's got to be on it 110% to win this league and to maybe do well in one of the other cups. So we haven't got time. As far as I'm concerned, I think maybe we should be looking at an exit in January. I hope he proves me wrong. I always say it. If I put a criticize a player, I used to even say it about Eddie James. You know I did. Prove me wrong, please. I want all of them to do brilliantly. I want our whole squad to be excelling and being absolutely brilliant players and doing well for themselves. But if it's not going to happen, then maybe he might be better off at another club. That's how I see it.
Yeah, Melvin, and then I'll go to you, Lee. But Melvin, what about you? Do you think he can turn this round at Arteta? Because for me, I think Arteta will be putting an arm around him, especially in this break, because I don't believe he's been picked by Brazil again. Yes, I don't think he's been with Brazil for a little while, even with just injuries as well as not being picked. But yeah, what say you? Do you think that he can get him out this rut, or is it more a him issue than a club issue?
I think Arteta's probably one of the only managers who can get him out the rut, or a move will get him out the rut. Nothing else. But we forget how much we forget about the injury he had, that first knee injury, how that set him back. He was flying before that. And do you remember when he got injured, we all went, oh, no, that's our team gone, our whole team. It was like Saliba Mark 2 before Saliba Mark 1. It was, and he's never come back from it, has he? He's never actually come back to be that level again. And every time he's come back, the level slightly dipped. So let's hope that Arteta can do his job, because he knew him at City as well. He probably came to Arsenal to be with Arteta anyway. There was obviously a relationship there to begin with. So as I'm saying, he's probably the only manager at the moment that can do it. But or they'll have to leave and get a club just to give him a boost, like a lot of players do. But it's such a shame, because when he first came, he was different gravy. I remember seeing him at Arsenal beat some team 6-0, some Spanish team, didn't we? 6, and he was like, oh my God, what we got here? He was like king of the castle. And it carried through for his league performances as well. You know, just go back. Can I just go back to Kyle Havertz? He's one of the strangest players that I've ever watched. I don't know what he's ever going to do when the ball comes to him. I haven't got a clue. I don't know whether he's going to kick it, head it, put it on his knee, or juggle it. I don't know if he knows, but I'll tell you something. The tighter positions he gets in, the easier it is for him to get out of them for some reason. He might get on the touchline. His three players are going, oh, hope we get a throw out of this. 2 seconds later, we're on the attack. I don't know. And also on Saturday, what he did, the ball was at his feet. All he had to do was push it a few inches and he couldn't touch it. He was like, you don't know. He's like, it's remarkable. But the guy has been a revelation. His effort is unbelievable. I think he's learned a bit from Odegaard with that. The two of them are the most, they chase down more than any other players I've ever seen. And it must be hard to mark him, because I don't think, if the crowd don't know what he's doing, I'm sure the centre half don't. Going, well, what's he going to do now? Which way is he facing? Why is he facing that way if the ball's open? And all of a sudden it all makes sense. Very strange player. Very fantastic.
Yeah, and Lee, what about yourself with Jesus? Do you think it's time, or do you reckon there's still enough there in the tank that makes you think we can turn him round?
I don't, James. No, I kind of think we did see the best of him a couple of years ago, and as Neil and Melvin has said, I think he is a confidence player, right? And it's not like he's got goals to fall back on, right? He's because he's not a natural finisher for a striker, right? He's you wouldn't bet your life on him on a 1-1. I know he's scored a few good goals. I mean, the Man United goal last season.
Oh, yeah, quality.
That was just quality, and he just think just do that more often. And he just he's not we that slot we do need, as we've all said, like a natural striker for Arsenal. You know, when you need a goal, we're not playing that well. We're under the cosh against a top team in Europe or a top team in the Premier League. When you're not particularly on it, you know, and Ian Wright, that's just going to get you a goal out of nothing against the run of play. With Jesus, you don't have that either. So you take that away, right? The ability to get a goal from nothing, and you're just and then relying on the player himself to make stuff happen. And whether it's the injury, whether it's just his confidence, but I honestly can't see him coming back to anything like the levels that he was at before. I mean, some players, and Neil touched on it, some players should be able to put himself, he's a professional footballer, so you'd think he'd have it in his locker to really turn it around. But I just don't see it with him. I just don't think he's... I just don't think he's got it in him now, unfortunately. So he'll obviously be on the periphery, be on the bench, and he might come on and do some good stuff. But as Neil said, we can't carry passengers. And ideally, we'd want a proper goal scorer, someone who can sniff a goal out in his spot. So I think I'd be very surprised if he stays beyond January. You never know, do you? I mean, there's always an outside chance, but I'd say it was extremely unlikely. But then again, a year or so ago, I was sitting here along with most of the Arsenal fan base saying, Havertz, somebody explain to us Havertz, right? All of us, virtually without exception. Right? Yeah, the odd person going, I know he was great. I was seeing him at Dortmund, he was great. And I was sitting there thinking, I'm just scratching my head. But confidence is a magic ingredient. And I think the team and the manager is just turned him into a wonderful footballer. And as Melvin said, you don't know what he's going to do. He reminds me a lot of Alan Smith, you know, big guy,
yeah,
good ball to feet. Like, he's almost like a more skillful version of Alan Smith. And he's got more aggressive as well. And he seems to be enjoying that side of the game as well, which you need to if you're a false nine, you're coming up against centre halves. But that now, when he's coming up against a bit of a lump at the back for the other team, he's winning fouls, he's winning free kicks, so he's doing all the horrible side of it as well, and it's an unbelievable turnaround. So credit to the manager, right, for signing him, because I certainly can see it, and most people, if they're honest, 60 million, you know, hence the song, we're all scratching our heads big time. So he's been a revelation.
Long may can I continue. Quickly. Sorry, can I talk just something very quickly that Melvin said, which is I didn't even think of that. I agree, yeah, now I'm thinking about it. The injury to Jesus was a massive setback for him. So there's probably some sympathy there that, you know, he's had that injury and maybe he's not quite the same player. But, you know, in terms of Arteta maybe thinking about that and taking that into consideration, well, he didn't with Emil Smith-Rowe, did he? And I actually think Emil Smith-Rowe is a better player, to be fair.
He's on current form as well.
Yeah, so, you know... I'm not sure what's going to happen with him, but it is a shame, as you said, Melvin. It is a real big shame. Definitely.
But so basically, we end the first half with, obviously, like we said, the Jorginho shot, and then the only one we had on target was the party shot right on the end. We go into half time. Obviously, I'm scrolling on the Twitter sphere and putting it out there, going, "Well, it's not too bad, you know. We're doing all right. We just need to, you know, pull our socks up and get this all sorted." And you know, the old classic phrase, Melvin, you used to sit in the East Stand Upper. I don't know if you were near me and you were near the same mat. It was the only thing I ever remember. And I remember being about 11 years old and actually asking my dad what it meant. This guy, every game, "Oh, it's all four-player, no fuck Arsenal. It's all four-player." I remember being in the car driving home with my dad going, "Well, what does he mean by all four-player?" And he was like, he was like, "Oh, you'll know one day, son. A girl will tell you." I went, "Oh, okay." And then we just carried on listening to Terry Christian in the car, like he was on the way back. Those were the good. I used to hate that Terry Christian, by the way. I used to do my head in. He was good at riling you up. He was good at riling you up because it was United Arsenal in those days, so they were the only two people calling. Yeah. So yeah, it was a brilliant time.
Wind up, merchant.
Yeah, he was, and he was very good at it. To be fair to him, but yeah, we get this initial warning from Southampton. where we go, oh, blimey, hang on a sec, they're playing here. You know, they're thinking that they can get something done. And then typical Arsenal, Southampton. Now, I mentioned it when I spoke to Neil and Jack on the Purely, where, for me, I'm watching at home, eating my cookies and my crisps, and I can see that Thomas Partey's never going to make it back into that position where he needs to be. Why didn't William Saliba see it? We praise the guy. We go on about him all the time. But I'm like, you've got to get out there quick. Yeah, you've got to get out there quicker.
Yeah.
I mean, Calafiori gets caught completely by this dibbling as well, bless him. It's, you know, Calafiori for me, on the ball and going forward, I'm scared of him, even though I'm a fan. I want him to beat these people, but I'm scared for them, for their own well-being. But yeah, he's got these rickets in him, Melvin, hasn't he, Calafiori? But, and Sterling as well, losing the ball in the build-up. He thought it was a free kick. It's never a free kick. He was just too soft. No. But yeah, Melvin, that goal, where do you obviously start the blame and then finish the blame?
I think really it rests. Yes, Partey couldn't do any better because it's not in him. It's not his fault, really. But I think 99 times out of 100, you expect Saliba to get closer to the forward because he gave him enough room to put it round. He's never done that. If you get closer, that option is out the window. So I was very disappointed with him. Some people were saying about the goalkeeper, it's right in the corner. And I don't know if he was blinded by the defender as well.
He shot in the box as well, Melvin, didn't he?
That's true. That's bad news. I mean, Jake, you said about they had a warning and people forget about that. We did have a warning. Everyone went, oh, hold on a minute. That don't supposed to happen. What happened there? They've got closer than us. And what I was shocked about was my son told me, come up somewhere. I must have missed it on the screen. We had one shot on target. I thought we peppered them the first 10 minutes, it seemed like. But obviously, it was going the wrong way. It was another frustrating day at the office for me, it was, until the second half. Until they scored. Once they scored, then everything changed.
Yeah.
But I'll go to you, Lee, and then obviously I'll pass it back round to Neil as well. But what do you think it is in terms with our... Because away, we seem to have this like hyper-focus and concentration level. But yet at home, and it's always seems to be like the first 5 to 10 minutes after half time where you think that's the time where you're going to be the most switched on because you've just had the rollicking or whatever from the manager beforehand. And yet, I don't want to sit here and say that they think, oh, Arsenal, you know, we can do whatever, because we saw Tottenham at the weekend have a 2-0 lead and they took it for granted and then they got slapped up by Brighton. So, yes, exactly. Exactly. But, what do you think it is? Do you think it's just complacency or mentality?
I think it's both of those things, James. I think it's we've won enough games in the last 2 years at home. Naturally, as a player, I would imagine you're just expecting to turn up where Arsenal were at home. What happens here? Oh, yeah, we normally win. We normally win easy. We're playing Southampton or Leicester. Oh, it's going to come. So rather than, as you say, when we're away, that's a tough opponent. We seem to be more at it, you know, more tuned in. But it is almost like we are Arsenal. We're at home looking at the watch. It's only a matter of time, isn't it? And we're going to get there. So we were caught cold, unfortunately. Errors in the build-up. And as you said about Saliba, again, I was thinking about it earlier. It's hard to criticise a man who's been perfect the last 2 years, right? Arguably, probably our most consistent player. You could argue Saka, but he's been unbelievable at the back. But too much space, and he got his angle wrong, right? So I don't know why. It was early in his level. You know, we're all entitled to make mistakes in life, and maybe that was just one of those things. He just got the angle because I was in the north-east corner. And I was thinking, I know that striker's going to get on his right foot and he's going to shoot, but I'm thinking, well, Saliba's going to close the angle down and get closer. And I'm thinking, he's not close enough. He's going to be able to shoot here straight. So it was kind of, you see it unfolding and maybe, maybe it's just an error, right? So, So I think we need to get a bit more dialed in at home because none of these games are a given, are they? I mean, I wouldn't say we were lucky to beat Leicester, but 4 minutes into extra time, you're thinking, Jesus, we're dropping 2 points at home. You know, we've been here before last year, you know, with Fulham at home in the West Ham game. You know, and we had 30-odd shots. But as Neil said, we can't afford to drop points. We just cannot afford to. So we kind of got out of jail, really. I mean, I never really thought we were in danger against Southampton. I always fancied us to come back and win that game. So, but Leicester could have easily gone the other way. And points we just can't afford to drop. We've got too many difficult games. So pleasing. The end of the day, Brighton was at home was a bit disappointing. But in terms of the old points tally, we're not too bad. We're not too bad. And me and Melvin were saying, just a slight side to veer off, James, sorry. We were just saying the last, you might have covered this the other week, Brighton at home. I thought the same as Melvin. We had a chat about it last week. We seem to be wasting time the last 7 or 8 minutes against Brighton at home. Yeah, the keeper was kind of sitting on keeping the ball. We didn't seem to have any urgency to go and win the game. Yeah, we had 10 men, but risk, reward, for me, going for the league, we just seemed to just wave the white flag to me. There was a lot of added time as well, so that was a bit disappointing. So my point is, good to go over the line, both those so-called easy games, Leicester tick, Southampton tick, because we've obviously got bigger games coming up, and there's not a lot of room for error, so hopefully we'll be more dialed in going forward at home against these so-called easier teams.
Yeah, definitely. And Neil, what about yourself? I know that obviously, like Lee and Melvin, you're over there a lot more. You've got, you know, you're sending stuff to me about the atmosphere and what people are thinking and feeling and everything. But what about yourself? What do you portion it to? Do you think it's, again, it's just a complacency or mentality? And like Lee said, these lot are, you know, they're so good now at just creating some, you know, a corner for us is just as good as a goal in a way because of what we do from set piece. Do you just think it's a case of maybe they're like, well, we'll come back, or it's just something's going to happen and we'll get something? What would you portion it to?
Well, having thought about it for a few days, I think it's a deliberate ploy to get Pep thinking, yes, they're going to lose, lull him to a false sense of security so he relaxes his players or his management at the side. And then we just go and batter the team in the last few minutes. So I think that's what it is. It's a ploy. It's a plan. No, I mean, I think it's just exactly what the boys have said. They said that, you know, it's a bit of maybe a lack of concentration coming out the second half, which is really bizarre. Because that's when you, as you said, James, you'd be most tuned in, having the pep talk and having maybe the manager shout a few things at you and whatnot. Because he's definitely more animated than Wenger ever was. Yeah, can I understand if it's Wenger? Is Wenger going to be saying anything, apparently?
No. Oh, Neil, I'll just quickly jump in. I would pay attention if Wenger was shouting because he never did.
Yeah, that's
yeah. It'd throw me off. It'd be like, why is he yelling?
Why is he yelling? This is not right. This is normal. But you can expect it from Arteta. Yeah, it is a strange one. I didn't mention complacency in the Purely Pod, but you'd hate to think it isn't. They're professionals. Surely you can't be complacent. But what I do like, look, let's just have a positive spin from it. We had a massive period, James and Lee, Melvin, where we would drop a goal or go behind and our heads would just drop and we would be like, that's it, done, game over. Sometimes we would scrape a draw, but you know, we would hardly ever manage to come back and win. At least with this team, this design, the hunger is so prevalent. Maybe it needs them sometimes a bit of a kick in the rear end. So, right, we're a bit down now, boys. Let's get moving, because that was an immediate response on that day. Yeah, Leicester, it took a bit more time. But, you know, you were talking about Brighton there, Lee, wasting time.
Yeah.
Well, don't you remember the Leicester game? It was 91 minutes and they were still playing at the back. And I thought, oh, my God.
Yeah, I know. Yeah, urgency. Right? Yeah, the keeper sometimes. Yeah.
Right. Yeah, but you know what? To me, that even suggests that they're so confident in their own ability that they think, it's fine. I know we've got...
Not as confident as us.
No,
not as confident as us. No, we're going, come on, get the ball forward.
Yeah, I know, exactly. That's exactly what... Well, everyone in the stadium was like that. But they're like, it doesn't matter, we've got 10 seconds, we're going to score. And they think the thing is, at the moment, it's working. What's going to happen is they can't keep doing this, especially against the all right, okay, again, I'm not showing any disrespect to Leicester and Southampton, but against the real title challenges that we're going to be up against, we can't afford to do this. So we've got to make sure that we get back to the being ahead at home, making the home the Emirates a fortress, and employing the same amount of focus and concentration that we do away and replicate that at home. I think our Achilles heel at the moment, and it has been for the last two or three seasons, is our home games. And we've got to find a way of eradicating that.
Yeah.
Yeah, and just to quickly touch on it, like you said, Neil, put the positive spin on it, and I will go to you first again, because I know, like you said, I know how much you love this man. Kai Havertz's goal, Neil. I hate mentioning the guy's name, but I have to say it, very Robin Van Persie-esque for me, the way that he got it in his control and just went bang. You know, Melvin, me and you spoke earlier in the year about the header in the Wolves game and how that wasn't a good morning header. And he meant, you know, he put every muscle and fibre of his body into it. I think he was, I don't know if it was a case of, you know, where he used to do it against Ramsdale in training or something as well, where he's just like, you know, I know that I can pick you out from there. So have some of that type of thing. But Havertz now, Neil, just before you go on your little wax lyrical moment about him, it's 13 goals and 9 assists in his last 21 games in all competitions. You know, he's got more goals as a centre-forward now than Jesus has playing as a centre-forward for Arsenal. And he's only been doing it since January. We're not even at the end of the year yet. He's beat his career tally as a centre-forward for Arsenal. And in the Premier League, he's got 20 goal involvements. That's either a goal or an assist in his last 20 games as a striker. And he averages an assist or a goal every 82 minutes that he plays, and that's the best in the league for goals and assists. Haaland's for goals purely. We won't even talk about that. Mm. But yeah, for goals and assists as a centre forward, he is the current best. So there's always this talk about, oh, you know, Arsenal've got goal getters, not a goal scorer. I think this guy's not doing too bad. What say you, Neil?
I think he's the complete player. Everyone can talk on about Haaland's 20,000 goals a season. But I still would say Kai Havertz, with maybe a fraction of that, is more of a complete player. And that sums it up. For me, he's just got so much hunger. I completely forgot when the final whistle blew at the end of the last game of last season. He was in tears. That's how much it meant to him. He so badly wants to win this league with Arsenal. He so wants it. I'd even go on record to say that he's probably the most hungriest of the whole lot, maybe even more so than Arteta. He's so desperate to win this league that he's actually really putting himself on the line to make sure it happens. And even if we're in trouble and maybe the team's not clicking quite as well as maybe they expected it to, he'll just make sure he's there. You know, we always said about we don't have many players that can come off the bench, for example, or even that Rory on the pitch that can be a game winner or a game changer in any one moment. Maybe he could be the answer. I think the last person that could probably be described as that was Alexis Sanchez. But, you know, now we've got Kai Havertz. And I think, you know, we were in trouble. We went 1-0 down. The crowd was like, what the hell is going on? Leicester 2.0 again. And all of a sudden, within 3 minutes, this guy just pops up. All right, yeah, great work by Saka. Saka, isn't it? What do we need to say about Saka? He's all there anyway. And he's always doing his thing and getting his numbers. But that goal was just terrific. It was so just powerful. It almost felt, it was telling us, I'm hungry. And that ball was hungry to feed itself in that net. It was just perfectly struck. And yeah, it was kind of Van Persie-esque. I agree with you. And I think Melvin, what you said earlier about how he can just, almost contort his body. You don't even know what he's going to do. And he's such a tall, big, kind of almost like awkward guy, isn't he? He's big, tall, and awkward. You don't think that he could do anything, but he does everything. And this is a bizarre thing. He's just an abnormality, I think, but in a good way. Brilliant. Oh, I love the guy so much. I can't tell you. And you know what? I think when we have our next game against Bournemouth, he's going to score again. He's just fantastic.
Yeah. And Lee?
I was going to question for Neil, right? Obviously, waxing lyrical, and he has done brilliant. Where's his weakness? Give me a weakness for Kai Havertz. What's his one weakness? Or hasn't he got any? Putting you on the spot, mate.
I'll tell you
what I think it is, but go on.
No, I'm going to give it to Melvin. Sorry, pass.
No!
Swerve. That's okay. Melvin, what would you say?
Melvin, he's played his Uno reverse on you.
Yeah. Very political, Neil. What I think is sometimes when he's either last minute, his last ball, or when he's in front of the goal, he's got too much time to think about it, he messes it up.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. That's where I was going. It's that too much time. There was a couple of times last season when he was kind of going in on goal, and you're thinking, I could feel the confidence that he was doing well last season as well. This wasn't in the struggling period, but this was towards the end of the season, of the season when he was flying. I still don't think he's going to score, right? And I think there was a, we had a breakaway goal. I can't remember the game. It might have been Chelsea. Brilliant finish, right? But I just don't think he's, when he goes through one-on-one, I'd never put my house on him, right? I'll give you a player I will put my house on, Robbie Fowler, right? Just, I don't want to spit on the floor talking about Liverpool. But that type of player, you know the ball's in the back of the net. Maybe the same Haaland, even though I can't bear Haaland. So that's the only part of his game. I just think maybe he thinks too much, like you said, Melvin, or just over, I don't know, he's more reactive, isn't he? Because you said earlier, you don't know what he's going to do. He doesn't know what he's going to do. So when he gets in one-on-one or just that nice, easy striker's finish, because I still don't think he's not a striker for me. He's a false nine and he's played brilliantly. But as I said earlier, Bayern Munich at home, we need somebody just to stick the ball in the back. We had so many chances in that game, right? Just a scruffy finish or a finish against the run of play. We're definitely still, for me, missing that player. And the closest player I can think of is obviously Ian Wright. The amount of times we are up against it, one ball forward, Wright is in, goal, 1-0. And that's the only thing for me Arsenal are missing. And if Havertz had that, I don't think I think it's a natural thing. I don't think you suddenly get it. You've either got it or you haven't. Robbie Fowler's and Ian Wright's have always had it. We don't have that type of player. I think it's the only, for me, a championship winning team is like a cake full of ingredients. So we've got all the ingredients now across with maybe a little bit of depth. I think it's a replacement for Odegaard. But for me, the key bit of ingredient we are still missing is that killer, that absolute killer in front of goal who's not going to miss. You're going to put your house on to score. And people will say, well, but it's finally, Martinelli got 11 and Saka can get 10 and you spread it. Very rarely, we did it, I think last season, didn't we, or season before, where they got 11, 15 and 14, Odegaard, Saka and Martinelli. But that very rarely happens. I can't think of many teams in history, right, that can spread goals across the forward line. Liverpool used to do it donkeys years ago, and City have done it recently. But sooner or later, the numbers are going to drop from Martinelli and Saka, so not Saka. And that's when you need that striker. And that's my only worry, that we're going to live to regret not having that type of player. And we all thought we were going to sign that killer striker, and we haven't. And I'm not complaining. We're happy. We're firing. But I just think when push comes to the shove, business end, I still want that killer. I'm going to keep saying it. I'm going to keep moaning. We still need a killer.
I think we all do, don't we? Yeah.
I think you made some really great points there, Lee. And I know I'm waxed lyrical about him, and I know I evade the question.
He's been brilliant.
But you've got to remember, he's only been doing it for 9 months. In that position, you got to also remember that, you know, even our greatest forwards had their lapses. All right, maybe not so in right, but even Henri made a few mistakes. Even Bergkamp, there was that's blasphemy because he's God. But I think what he lacks there, where maybe he's got too much time, as you said, and maybe he's better at the harder finish than the easier one.
Yeah, he is.
The point is, at the moment, he's still getting the numbers. And I'm not saying he's the answer. Don't get me wrong. I agree with you. I think we still need a proper out and out, you know, finisher.
Yeah, I'm not criticizing. He's doing brilliant.
I know you are. That's the only element.
If I could just sprinkle that.
Yeah, if you can. But just remember as well, we've done all of this the last few games without our talisman, Odegaard. And even we have done all of this. So can you imagine if he comes back? And you know what? Don't worry about a finisher, Lee. When Arteta finally starts playing Ethan every game, you just watch our finish. We'll be winning 6-0 every game. And so I can't wait for Manchester City to come to the Emirates, because we are going to absolutely bulldoze them.
Yeah, Melvin, just before I go to you about Havertz's goal, because I'll let you have a bit of wax lyrical time about him as well. Neil, do you remember when me, you and Ray did the podcast and we were speaking about Havertz? Because, you know, like we said, he'd be speaking about it most of the time. And Ray threw to me and you and said, how many goals do you think he's going to get? And you said 20 plus and I said 25 plus. And you and Ray both went, whoa, that's big. I'll throw the question back at you now. Do you think he's going to get 25 plus? Because I think on the form that he's on, and the way that the delivery that's going into him and everything else, I think 25 plus for him is doable. What about you?
I think it's doable. 100% it's doable, but I'll still be prudent and say 20 plus.
Nice. And Melvin, this is your time. You don't have to answer the 20, 25 plus question, but you've got the Kai Havertz goal, Melvin. Talk
number
to me.
One. What did you... Number one, how important was it so quickly after they scored? That's very important. Number two, he actually kicked the ball for one with venom, like he meant it. He was nothing was going to stop him. He went past the defender like he wasn't there. He was in front, and it wasn't that far away. I mean, I only saw it once. I don't think it was that far away from the keeper, but it went so fast. He didn't have time to react. He meant it. It's lovely to see. No, Lee, if we could have an unbelievable centre forward, that'd be a bit of a headache. But I don't think you should. I won't criticise him too much, because I think our team are not ruthless enough. I think we missed too many chances as a team. I think Martinelli has missed chances, Trossard's missed. I mean, all of them. Saka even has missed chances.
Yeah.
But normally you'd say, Saka, that's got to be a goal for you, mate. You know, and you've missed it. And also, I've noticed that sometimes the decision making, it's easy for me sitting where I'm sitting, obviously. But why do a lot of footballers, when they're one-on-one, the ball comes through, kick it to the near post all the time, when they've got the whole goal to aim at, and it goes in. How many times have we hit the side netting? You should never hit the side netting. If you're going to hit it for the nearest post, you at least hit the post. And we hit the side netting so many times. But as I say, we're not ruthless enough. But can I just mention another player that we haven't mentioned?
Like I said, you can do whatever you like on here, my friend. Go for
it. I think no one's really mentioned, and I think he's an amazing player, but he was unbelievable last year, and he's just come back a little bit. I've noticed it. Rice is not playing like he did last season. He hasn't got up to those levels. I don't know what it is. Is it too much football? When he played for England in the the summer, he's lost that. And you see you see him huffing and puffing a lot now. You're all saying, and he's, I notice it. He's like, the ball's gone. He's done his little bit, and he's like puffing and puffing. I mean, no. Last season, he played for 180 minutes, and he wouldn't take a breath. And also, what disappointed me on Saturday is, and he's done it. He did it a few times recently. The ball gets rolled to him at the edge of the box, and he doesn't get anywhere near the goal. He hits it 12 yards over the bar or well wide, and there's not that much pressure on him to kick, to have a shot. And a year last year, or even for West Ham, he was knocking him in and in the corner of the net and all that stuff. I mean, the one against West Ham that he scored, look at that quality. And he doesn't look anywhere near like he's going to score a goal like that, given the same opportunity. And I think he's got to get going as well. He's in second gear. He's got to move through the gears for me. You know, I mean, if it's a big word in life, if he can move through the gears, we get Odegaard back, I think things could be very, very good. And then Martinelli continues his improvement. I think we could be okay, boys.
Yeah, and you make a great point there. And I'll go to you first, Melvin, because you waited so patiently to talk about the first goal. Martinelli, we're talking about people that come in out of the cold, got to do something. I think that was his first touch when he came on. Saka, I mean, we're going to talk much more about him later on, so don't worry about that. But he plays the ball into what now has been called the corridor of uncertainty by Arsenal fans. I know it's been a phrase for a long time, but it's been used a lot with Arsenal lately. And one thing I will say, just quick as well, Moreno, when he came on, every time I'm seeing him, Melvin, to me, I quite like this guy. I think I'm gonna end up falling in love with this guy a bit more. More and more I see him play. He nearly got the header. He nearly touched it and scored his first goal. And I thought, wow, that's an introduction for you. Welcome to Arsenal. But yeah, Martinelli, what a finish!
You know where I was sitting, you could see him making the run. You just see him making the run. I'm thinking, is he going to get this? The ball went, a beautiful ball went over, and if you could have stopped the time, I'd have thought to myself, you know what, he's going to miss it, isn't he? He's out of form. He can't do a one-on-one. If he's running with a keeper, normally he'd put him in blindfolded, but this season, and he just, it looked absolutely confident. As he ran in, bang, absolutely. Mm-hmm. And it was a great run by him, great finish. And that is the goal, I think, to put him on another level now as regards to confidence. Now he's got all the jets flying, all the jets are turned on now. And I hope that the next game is away to Bournemouth, isn't it? I hope we start with him. Right, I really do.
I think he will. Yeah, I think he will.
Oh, hold on a minute, son. It's got to, can I just change something up here?
Hey!
Sorry.
There it is.
That's a there nice. Oh, I didn't know I was wearing that.
Yeah, that's available. They're available to buy.
Yeah.
L1 Stone on Twitter. Click it. Have a look. Get your shirts in. Thank you, Melvin.
Don't be shy.
Give
us a twirl, Melvin.
There's no back to it.
Lee, I'll go to you next. Obviously, for the Martinelli goal, and another thing I'll say as well, and it's been mentioned elsewhere, but you guys are in the ground, so it's dreadful for you because you get no commentary, you get no like what's going. Did it take so long? I mean, like I said, I'm watching indoors. Oh. And I know it's onside straight away. And then they're saying, well, Moreno's off. I'm like, Moreno's not off. I'm like, the guy's playing both of them on. I can see that. Yeah. You've got way more angles and screens. I've got one television and one set of eyes. And there's like four, five, six, seven. How many screens galore? And they're saying,
What's Moreno got to do with it? Did he touch it? Did Moreno touch it?
No, he didn't touch it at all. That's what they were looking at it to see if he... Well, the thing for me is, Melvin, these guys watch football more than probably anyone else with all the, all the footage they have to go through because they mess up so much. They make them study and study and study. But it was like I said with Neil when we were on the Purely. Watch the flight of the bloody ball. Because to train to be a ref, you've got to do age groups from six onwards. You're not telling me from doing that, you don't know how to track the flight of a football. You'd know because Martinelli wouldn't be able to volley it as clean as that because it's gone the other, the ball's going to zip the other way or he's going to have to take a touch, then smash it.
Or a different level, it comes at a different height.
There you go. Touch. Yeah, exactly. But yeah, Lee, that was something I just wanted to add in. But yeah, the Martinelli goal.
Yeah, unbelievable. Didn't they think he was offside originally, but not interfering? I thought that was the issue. Moreno was, they thought he was further forward in an offside position. But anyway, without going down a rabbit hole there, I couldn't believe the amount of time. We had a big celebration of it, obviously, and then we just sat there 1 minute, 2 minutes, 3 minutes. I'm like, Jesus Christ, how on earth can it be that difficult? And then you're starting to worry and stuff. They're taking this amount of time, they're going to chalk it off, right? And that was a worry, but fantastic ball in. And like Melvin said, to me, it looked like the ball was just going to go out and at no point did I think he was going to get there. and when he did get there, again, he didn't have to think about it. He's all his concentration is trying to get to the ball before it goes out. And then it just whooshed straight in under Ramsdale. Fantastic ball in. Fantastic ball and just a killer in it because it's like those free kicks that come in and everybody leaves. I think it was a goal of the weekend a couple of weeks ago. Oh, it was Saka, wasn't it? Saka of the European game done the free kick and then one of our players run across the defenders and it goes straight in. It's one of those. The ball's bending in so no one really wants to touch it and they're kind of hoping it's going to go out and then I was high up as well so I see him bending his run. And as I say, at no point did I think he was going to make it. So it was a relief. A good goal, really good goal. So set us up nicely, didn't it?
Yeah, Neil, I know you're obviously big Martinelli man. I remember the first game, the Fiorentina game, and he made that run and nearly scored. And you went, "That's the guy I'm going to pin all my hopes on." you have, like Melvin said earlier, do you think this is the start of? It's the whole bus thing, isn't it? You wait for one and then more come along at the same time. So do you think this is it now for him?
I hope so. I really, truly hope so. I want so much for that kid. I want him to become the best striker in the world because I've been saying that from day one. I really have a lot of time for him. He's had a really long blip. I don't know what's been happening, but we saw it in the game before as well. He started playing better.
And it
came to fruition in this one. And that was such a... Look, Saka's cross, it's just impeccable. It's beyond perfect. But it still took a really well-timed and awareness, a lot of awareness for Martinelli to get that right. And, you know, it might just seem like a tap in to some people, but it's not. It's quite a clever goal, and it happens so quick as well. You've got to remember how fast these players have got to be. You know, you guys were talking earlier about, you know, that sometimes they kick it into the net, but we've also got to remember how the game is played at such a fast pace. Sometimes you don't even have time to even maybe readjust yourself, no, and try and get the ball on target. So it is easy for us to sit here and moan and groan, you know, sitting eating our cookies, James, and, you know.
Yeah.
But it's a very, very difficult task. And I know they pay tremendous amounts of money, but they're still only human, and it's not easy. But that was such a well-timed run. It's brilliant. For me, more important than the goal, well, obviously the goal's important, but it's about how he goes on from here. And I hope he just rekindles that form he had two seasons ago. Because if he can get double figures, along with Kai Havertz getting 25, as you said, James, and, you know, the others maybe chipping in with a few here and there, you know, we're looking good. We're looking good for scoring goals. A happy Martinelli and a confident Martinelli, yeah, that might be a little bit of bad news for Trossard, but I've always preferred Trossard coming on as an impact sub anyway. So I think if we can have a good 1-4 Martinelli starting games, and then Trossard just to come in if things aren't going our way, or we just want to have that killer touch and finish it off, I think that's the perfect setup. But fabulous. But yeah, VAR, let me just have a I'm done with them. So, I mean, I've been done with the whole thing for so long. But the reason why it took so long is because they were trying to find any little line on their spec, whether it's a spec or what the hell it's called, spectrographs or whatever contraptions they use. They were trying every conceivable possible way to try and get that goal to be off. And it didn't work.
No, exactly. And I mean, the last goal, and I'll go to you first this time, Neil. Sorry, Mel, I'm just going to just mute you slightly there because you've got a little tiny bit of background noise there. But yeah, I'll go to you first, Neil, for the last goal. Obviously, Bukayo Saka is the one who tucks it away. And I do my little graphics, don't I? And just quick before I let you go, I've got this one here where he was my man of the match. I'll ask you guys for yours, but I think we're probably all the same. And then also, I've got another one here. In 1 week, look at this here. Look, this is lovely. He's got a nice he's got a nice picture of him and Robert Pires because this was taken before anyway. I think this was Emirates Cup. But yeah, in 1 week, he's tied Robert Pires' assists record for Arsenal. And then in the same week with what he did against PSG, he's beaten Mesut Ozil's goals and assist record as well. So, I mean, he's 23 years old, and just on the game, Neil, obviously, man of the match for me, created 7 chances, had 7 shots, assisted 2 goals and scored 1. He's got 10 goal involvements now for the season. He's tied with Marcus Rashford on 91 for the most goals and assists by a player under the age of 24. He's got 28 more in the Premier League to beat Cristiano Ronaldo's record of 118. But like I said, he's got 11 months to do that in. Do you think he's going to do it?
Yes.
Yeah.
Well, can you say about the guy? I mean, he just produces every single time he plays. He could be having a bad game, or in comparison to his standards, having a bad game. And that's when we pick up on these little nuances, because he's raised his benchmark so blooming high ever since he really hit, you know, became an Arsenal player, first team player, that, you know, even the slightest blip, we're thinking, oh, what's wrong with him? But it doesn't matter. He could be having a bit of a torrid game or not maybe up to his standards, and he'll still get the numbers. Somehow he will get the numbers because, again, like Havertz, I think he's got a lot of hunger and desire. He wants to win this so much. In his interviews, he comes across so well. He comes across very likable, but he's a right monster on the pitch, isn't he? He's like Jekyll and Hyde. Loveliest guy that you could probably meet and probably want to be friends with. But then on the pitch, mate, he's not taking any prisoners, and it doesn't matter.
Teddy with a shotgun, isn't it, Neil?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. You know, you can have 2 players on him, 3 players, 4 people's kicking the living, you know what, out of him. And he just gets up, and it's almost like he's just unruffled, and I'm going to get on and do my thing. The guy is made of titanium. He's probably Wolverine in disguise. And he's just an incredible, incredible, insatiable player with a massive appetite, with lots of hunger, and he just wants to win this league. And I think, and his numbers just speak for themselves. And in that goal, I mean, look, credit to was it Havertz that he like kicked it when he was on the floor? I mean, Jesus Christ. Like Melvin was saying earlier, you don't know what you're going to get from him. He's on the floor. Like Raya that time. Remember Raya when he almost kept City's equaliser out and he wasn't even looking. He had his back to his... You know, it's like, you know, Havertz is like, well, if you can do that, Raya, I'm going to do a pre-assist on the floor, from the floor then. How about that? Have some of that. You know, absolutely incredible. But you
what
know,
I like back, just... what I like just as well with this goal at the weekend is obviously, you know, you got Trossard running through.
Yeah.
I'm screaming at the telly going, you got Martinelli on the left, you got Saka. I'm like, what are you doing, you tit? I'm like, give someone the ball. I'm like, oh, for God, what are you doing? And then it rolls through to Saka. And bear in mind, right foot, which is his weak, so he's not got
which
time.
Is weak.
Yeah, and he just goes bang. And I'm like, there he is. And like you said earlier, just he can have a game where for 92, maybe 93 minutes, there's nothing. And I know, Lee, you said earlier about having a killer. I think he's the only one we've got, isn't it? Because he is the
he
only
is closest
one
to it.
Just,
and two words, James, end product. He's always got end product. And sometimes he goes under the radar, right? But his levels of consistency and quality in the goals, the assists, you know, he is a go-to man constantly. And he's probably one of the most robust footballers I've ever seen. I've never seen a footballer. I'm hard to think of a player who gets kicked as much as that kid, and he stands up to it. And he's there week in, week out, which is why I said, in some ways, the one player I think I would have rested would have been Saka. I would have given him a breather. No, England would have played him. Just that little breather. And then obviously maybe not gone with the team we went with. But anyway, it went the other way. But yeah, he performed. And I'm not sure whether England are playing, but Saka will be playing tonight and he'll play 85 minutes.
Him and Rice are both playing. Like we said, they'll play the full 90.
Of course they will. And sometimes you think it's just too much. And maybe, you know, we were saying earlier about what you were saying, James, why do you think we take a while to get going? At the end of the day, we've had the Euros a couple of months ago. That was a long season, and the European Championships, and then we had the tour in America. So these players must be not just physically but mentally tiring. So maybe they do just come out in the second half and they go, oh, let's just hope it. You know, like Melvin says about Rice. Quite often he does. He looks out of breath. He's got both his arms on his waist, Rice, and he looks knackered. He's out of breath. And you're thinking maybe he's still getting up to speed. Maybe they're, you know, mentally, it's just a tough thing to get going. So, you know, they're human beings. As much as we think they're machines and they're robots, they just, you know, they can't always come out. And maybe they are coming out at the start of second half, hoping it's just going to happen. It's just going to happen because we're Arsenal, we're at home, and so naturally they ease off. So, yeah.
Melvin,
sounds like someone's doing some cooking in the background now.
Yeah,
well, I think it's your earphones, Melvin. I think if you can talk with use, I think it's that's doing it. If you can use it without the earphones, it might help.
You can hear us, Melvin.
Is that better?
Yeah,
yeah, a little bit.
I was going to say, Bukayo Saka, Melvin. Anything more to say?
Not really. What can you say about the guy? I mean, as you've mentioned, he gets kicked again and then kicked again. And he keeps getting up. He's like one of those old-fashioned, what was it, a clown that had a round bottom. And every time you push him over, he
Weeble.
Comes up again.
Weeble.
Oh, right. He's just amazing. You know. And also, players cannot tackle him. He got the ball at his feet and they cannot dive in. I don't know, if they dive in, that split second, he's going past them. So they've got to just wait and hopefully it passes the ball with someone else. You can see the going, just give it to someone. Or he loses it because they ain't going to get the ball off him. But very rarely does that happen. No, he's a pleasure. I'm so pleased that he had the chance because he's number three in the list to be the captain for a few games. He well deserves that, the way he used to carry the team when he was about 18 in the old days. Yeah. No, he deserves everything he gets. You can't say too much about the guy. And as I say, he's 23. Look what he's achieved. And who knows what he can achieve. So, no, very happy with him. Very happy. Brilliant.
Just need him to get some nice silver trinkets at the end of the season, don't we?
That's all we're missing, James. That's all we're missing.
Exactly. So yeah. I got three tiny little questions before I wrap this up. Is everyone all right for time, or do you need to? I don't want to keep anybody here.
Yeah,
because I know we've done over an hour already, but like Hente put in there earlier, you know, you don't want to interrupt because the discussion's so good. I don't want to ruin it. David Raya for me this game, and I'll go to you first, Neil. Probably for his standard.
Yeah.
Not
probably. Oh. Hello, can you hear me?
Yeah.
Okay.
No, you're still in.
By his standards, I reckon this is worst game of the season. Worst game for a while, to be fair. Flapping a little bit, not as certain as he usually is. With a couple of the, because they had more than one chance, obviously more than the goal. We've had a few scares, and I just felt that I'm not going to blame him for the goal. By the way, I think I don't know whether it was Lee or Melvin who mentioned it earlier. I'm not blaming him for the goal. No. There's nothing much he could have done about that. But there was other times around that where normally he's so certain whether he's going to... He's very good at collecting the ball. And I think he just flapped a little bit a couple of times and he just wasn't... His positioning wasn't quite there. But he's allowed a blip. He's been absolutely sensational of late. He's won how many Man of the Match awards? I mean, we don't want him to because we want our forwards to win them or our midfielders to win them. But still having said that, the fact that he is winning them is showing how what he does. I mean, double saves and all sorts of things. I mean, he's just got everything, hasn't he?
But I think he's been my player of the season, Neil.
Yeah, well, there you go.
For me, he's been my player of the season.
Well, there you go then. So if he's, you know, we're all allowed to have a blip. As I said to this earlier, even Henri used to have one, even Bergkamp. They're human beings. They're allowed to have blips. The point is, it was academic because it didn't cost us anything. We got 3 points. Let's hope he just improves the next game.
And Lee, what about you with Raya for this one? What do you think happened there? Just again, like Neil says, he's allowed to have a...
He's allowed to have a blip. And again, I think it does come down to, if you think about the circumstances, we're playing one of the easiest games of the season at home. So again, the European Championships, that, you know, and maybe they're not up to speed, or maybe they're thinking this is the game we can take our foot off the gas, including the goalkeeper. Maybe they're thinking, because again, but we're all human. Sometimes, you know, in our work or in our lives, sometimes you have to be caught like a rat in a trap before you do something, right? You need to find that motivation. So you, human beings have got a tendency, maybe it's just me, to coast, right? Rather than put in maximum effort. If you can get the same result with 70% of the effort, why would you put in 95%? Hopefully, and it's the same for these footballers, they'll turn up at the Emirates. And then maybe thinking, Ray is probably thinking, you know, be a stroll today. And mentally, maybe he's just not switched on. If he was, you know, playing Europe or, you know, the game at City, completely switched on. I think that's a lot to do with it. Same, we've already mentioned it with Saliba, not quite for that one moment, not quite on point. And it must be difficult game after game after game to hit those levels. As Neil said, we're all human beings. And I purely think it's down to that. Southampton at home, we'll roll him over, and he's just had he's had an off day. He's been getting plenty of plaudits, and he's been unbelievable. I mean, if we would have thought a year or so ago when he took over from Ramsdale that he hit the level that he's hit, we would have taken it all day long. None of us again like haven't. So I certainly didn't see it. I was thinking, well, there's probably not a lot in him. He's better with his feet, but he's not just better with his feet. He's great at a number of things, and. He's a real great addition. As I say, James, he's not far off for me as well, being a player of... I'd Saka, I'd probably say, would edge it, but it's not a bad shout. He's been that good. I mean, those, the two double saves, you know, off the, you know, the Ollie Watkins and then the other one in Europe. I mean, Jesus Christ, one of those in a career is amazing. He done two in a week. Jesus Christ. So, brilliant.
Melvin, I know the big moment that people go on about is obviously the corner situation. And it was like Southampton had done an Arsenal. They were like, we're going to plonk someone right on David Raya. Just annoy him a little bit. And like you said, it was the first time that he had flappy hands, which I didn't think flappy existed for him. Yeah.
Well, that was a bit disappointing the way he flapped at that. And we got away with one there because that ball could have gone anywhere. But Other than that, I was also disappointed with his distribution. He seemed to take a long time in making up his mind what he's going to do with it. There was one part in particular.
I'm glad you said this, Melvin, because I feel the same. It was the first time that I've ever seen him, even when the time wasn't late, when they crossed or it was the set piece situations again, he laid on the ball. Because normally he's up and like, who's running? Ping.
Yeah, too long. Yeah, you're
just,
right.
Yeah, there was really...
one incident where he got the ball, got up, and there was one Arsenal player running. It might be Martinelli. He was away. Yeah. And he just had a ping of 60 yarder.
Yeah.
And he suddenly turned, looked back at him, and it was too late. And you could see the crowd. Yeah. There was a little bit of a...
I know.
And it was a little bit of indecision. I don't know why that was. But listen, as you say, everyone's allowed. If we hopefully they're getting the bad games out of their system now and they'll kick on.
100%. And then just again, before we go, another question I've got. And this one's going to be interesting because I think me and Neil are going to have the same answer, but I'm really interested what Melvin and Lee are going to say. So I'll go to you last, Neil. So obviously the injured players that Arsenal have got out that are looking to come back, we've got Martin Odegaard slated for Liverpool. He's looking at potentially coming back for the Liverpool game. I believe that's on the 27th. You've got Ben White coming back the 19th, hopefully for Bournemouth. Timber coming back the 19th for Bournemouth. Zinchenko coming back the 19th for Bournemouth. And I think this guy's in the Federal Witness Protection Program. Kieran Tierney, I don't know when he's meant to be coming back. I don't know where he is. He could be anywhere now, Kieran Tierney. I don't know what's going on with him.
I think he's in Ukraine helping him out, isn't he?
He could be. He could be anywhere. It could be a segment for my show. Where's Tierney? We'll have like the Where's Wally up and I'll make it really small and then see if people can find him. And we'll give him one of my brother's shirts if they find him. But yeah, Melvin, I'll go to you first. Out of all those players that I've said, which one do you think is the most important for Arsenal to have back right now?
Well, it's the obvious is Odegaard, isn't it? That's the obvious. You can't even... I don't think there's a discussion to be had, is there? The second
there
one.
There is from my perspective, and potentially I think Neil's as well. Well, Lee might be the same, but yeah, I don't know.
The second one, if you're asking me, you've had four players, another one, I think Timber gets the nod in front of Ben White. I think he gives us so much more on the right hand side as a team. I mean, look, we don't want Parsi playing there ever again, do we? We want to take his boots away.
You don't feel like having a party when parties. Right back to
thing I will say about him for this game, he never got dribbled past. In terms of him playing as a right back, that was his best performance of actually being a right back.
It's all about levels, isn't it?
Yes, 100%. But Lee, what about you? Are you the same? Do you think Mr. Odegaard, obviously he's the captain, he's the talisman, like we said earlier, is he the most important for you?
Not like Melvin. Sorry, big up Melvin. Not even up for debate for me. It's about the easiest to sit the question I think I've ever asked. Jay. Odegaard, absolutely. He makes us tick. He is our main man. I think he is our main man. Again, it's difficult. Saka's brilliant, unbelievable levels of consistency. But he is our conductor. He conducts the orchestra, right? He gets us going. He's the heartbeat of our side. So for me, it's a no-brainer. I thought you were going to ask who would you leave out? And it's automatically, we're all going to the Ben White Timber, aren't we? And I'm going with Melvin Timber. Ben White has never let us down. And if I was Ben White, my hands would be up saying, what do you mean I'm sub? Sub? What have I done wrong? You've done nothing wrong. But his Timber's so solid. And he gives us plenty going forward. And it's just the first time in a long time I feel like our defence, right, is just so solid in every single aspect. It's almost a throwback to the Adams, Keown, Winterburn, Dixon days. They just are so solid. Calafiori is basically, he's a marauder. He's like a Viking marauder, even though he's Italian. Right, he gets that ball. And that tackle that he does, where he just goes on the floor and comes up with the ball. I think he's done it two or three times. I'm like, Jesus, unbelievable. Red card, I think I see it on social media somewhere. Red card waits to happen, guaranteed. It's risk reward, definite red card coming. But yeah, for me, Odegaard, the most important player, Timber for Rice, and I feel bad because Benny Boy hasn't really put a foot wrong. And if anything, I'd have Ben White in just for the winding up the keeper, you know, the Shea Azzurri, from the corners. That's the one thing. I think he was brilliant last season doing that. Just he's and that's what we need. We need to be horrible. Got to be horrible. We've said it before, Melvin, on other Richard's podcast, and we're too nice sometimes. We need a bit more of that nastiness, that bit of grit. I love kicking the ball at the Villa player the other week, John McGinn. Brilliant. We need more of that. More nastiness. Yeah.
And Neil, I'll come to you because when I thought of this earlier, I thought I've got a really good question here. This is a really interesting debate. And Melbourne and Lee have made me feel like I'm going to be sleeping now. what say you? Because I think you're going to have the same answer as me. But now I'm looking at it going, I think this is going to be a full house and I'm going to look a dick here. But yeah, go ahead.
I'll join you and I'll say Timber.
Yeah. Good man. Thanks right. for backing me up.
Just to eat
strength in numbers. Thank you.
Look, my only worry about that is not because I absolutely think Timber's going to be so... Is going to be another one that's... We are so blessed. And we're not... How many players can we talk about here? I'm so looking forward to Ethan. I'm so looking to Martinelli getting back on form. And then you've got Sacco, Havertz. You've got Rice. Hopefully we'll get out of blooming second because he's been absolutely rubbish. I'll say it. He's been rubbish this season. Rice has for me. He played a little bit better towards the end, I think. I started seeing a little bit better from him at the end of the Southampton game, but he's been, compared to last year, he's been it. So we've got so many players to look forward to. And Timber, oh my God, I was saying it last season. I said if he hadn't got injured, he would probably play of the season last season, I think. Mm. And he's going to show it this season. He's an outstanding player. But my only concern with it is I love Ben White and I don't want him to see him go out of the team. I don't want to see him sold.
I'm the same. I love him.
I absolutely love him. Yes. There are times where, you know, that you think, oh, God, what's he doing there and why is he? But generally, he's been such a great servant for us. Unless Timber goes back to the left and White plays in California, he doesn't play all the games. Or we just rotate. Why can't we just rotate? Why rotate for the cup, at least?
You say rotate, Neil, but in football, sometimes it's not.
Not in the Prem, Mel. I'm talking about the cups.
Oh, right. Yeah, fair enough. Sorry.
Because I think you need consistency. You need consistency. I'm not one for that either. I think I said it earlier, didn't I? I said if all our 11 are fit, our best 11, you play them. Doesn't matter if it's Southampton or if it's Blooming, whoever it is, because we can't afford to drop points in this Premier League. But in the Cup, surely. But I'll go with Tim.
When you say Cup, do you mean Champions League as well? FA Cup?
Yeah, Champions League as well, because, I mean, end of the day, up until from now till January, after the international break, we're playing about three games a week, Lee.
Yeah, there's a lot of games, aren't there?
So we need to manage players. You know, as much as they all probably want to play every single minute of every game, we've got to manage them. But I'll go with Timber, I think. Look, because we've been doing okay with Odegaard, and we know Odegaard's going to come back and he's going to be fine when he does. But, you know, I was even saying, wasn't I, James, a couple of weeks ago, that I wouldn't mind Ethan playing, starting these games and making it hard for Odegaard to get back in the team because I rate the kid so much. I rate him so much. But, it was a bit of tongue-in-cheek, Melvin, to be fair. But, you know, I'm just saying that at the end of the day, you know, everyone was saying that when Odegaard was going, who have we got? We've got Fabian Loan. We've sold ESR. And I was saying, it's Ethan. He's there. The answer's right in this back in your face. Ethan, get that boy minutes because Saka had to start somewhere and he did.
So Ethan's different type of player, isn't
he? And he's just an incredible player. And I want to see him play as much as he possibly can. So out of Odegaard and Timber, it's very, very close, but because I thought I'll leave it up for you, James, we'll go with Tim.
Pass him the 50 quid after.
The checks in the post. My justifiable reason, obviously, Martin Odegaard has been my favourite Arsenal player, and I think he's been our best Arsenal player for at least two, maybe three seasons. Even when he was a loanee, he was one of the better players compared to the ones that were there at the time. I looking at what I was seeing, and obviously seeing he's slated back for Liverpool, I've got no qualms about Martin Odegaard starting against Liverpool and doing well. But I looked at Bournemouth, and I think they're a better side than what people give them credit for. But what they have got as well is they've got incredibly tricky wingers. This Semenyo guy that they've got, I think he's one of the superb this season. He's looking really, really. And I thought Timber for me is the most important to get back, because in terms of playing against tricky wingers, I think he's our best 1v1 defender now at the club. Mm. I used to think it was Tomiyasu, and I'm glad he's back because maybe he might get some minutes now. Even him to come in to cover for Saliba as a centre-back, I think Tomiyasu's very good at centre-half as well as playing as either full-back, because he's done that job for Arsenal as well, because he just wins every single header. So why not chuck him at centre-half, because nothing's getting over the top of him because he wins everything. But yeah, for me, I just think Timber... I mentioned in my last podcast I did, I'm slowly developing a man crush on the guy anyway, because like you said, Lee, about people that are nasty, he don't get bullied. Yeah. He ain't having nothing off nobody. And what I like about as well with him, like Ben White, is he'll cause some aggro and then he'll just run away. He'll just leave the scene as quick as he can. Yeah, can't put me because I'm over here now. Yeah. I'm down there. It's I've started it, but just quickly get away, run away as fast as I can.
You do, James. You need that ingredient. All the great teams are the Invincibles at it, in spades, in spades, to be at it, that nastiness. So,
And that's a great point there as well. Yeah, he didn't go with Japan. Mm. We've actually done quite well this international break by telling some of these managers to swivel and keep players that we need to keep fresh. I'm glad Havertz isn't going. I'm glad Partey's not going. Yeah. Tomiyasu, I'm over the moon. But that was my justifying for it. I think Timber is such an important player. And like you, I don't ever want to not see Ben White start. And I think, having as many good options as possible is great, because we've got all the different competitions. And like I said, I want to go far. Yeah. I don't want to get knocked out in the cup first time round again.
No.
Carabao Cup, get to the quarters and everything. I want to go as deep as we can in every single competition we can.
Go for all four.
Exactly. Neil reckons we're winning all four. So, and undefeated as well. We're not losing a game in any of them. So, But before we leave, predictions for that game against Bournemouth. I know it's still a bit of time away, but Melvin, I'll go to you first and then Lee and then obviously Neil to finish up with.
2-0.
Nice. And Lee?
3-1. Arsenal.
Neil?
4-1.
Oh, I'm glad I got so many people backing me tonight, because Lee, I've done 3-1 as well. I think exactly the same. Oh, yeah, as.
All right, get some money on that then, James, I think.
Yeah, well, I'm with Neil. I think Havertz is scoring, so I want to see. Maybe if I put 3-1 Havertz now on the old 365, or I know other betting sites available before I get claimed for advertising. I mean, it's bad. I'm going to get flagged for promoting my brother's shirts, I reckon. They're going to have a go saying that I've got to buy props.
It's my shirt. What are you talking about? It's my shirt.
They're going to go to me.
They're going to tell
me I'm a pyramid scheme or something, aren't they? It's all right. You can have people promoting beheading other people on here, but the minute I try and flog some t-shirts, I'm a bad guy. I'm out of order.
Yeah, 2 years, James. Yeah. 2 years in prison.
Unbelievable.
Exactly.
I'm not telling you what to do, James. It's your channel, but stick to the shirts.
Yeah, exactly. And Pente's back in a 3-0 Arsenal win. But thank you so much, all of you in the chat, and thank you all for coming on. As I always do, Melvin, if people have liked what they've listened to from you tonight and they want to hear more, see more, where can they go? Don't give out your address.
I ain't got no curtains either. No, you're fine.
Give out your address, because I've actually got an influx of female listeners the last few days on audio. So, if you've got no curtains and you want to give out your address for the female listeners, by all
means. James.
If these girls all eat afterwards, it's no good. No. I'm on Tuesday nights normally on the transfer show, or KS1. It's the same thing. You get it on YouTube.
Yeah, and it's a brilliant show. I've tuned in a couple of times. I always enjoy listening to that one. And Lee, yourself, where can people find you? And like I said, hear and see more.
Yeah, I mean, but basically, I'm gun for hire. I mean, I've done Rich Butler's over and over. That's gone a bit quiet. So that's it, really, James. Unless you ask me on again.
100%. Don't worry about it. Yeah, certainly.
Cool.
No, thank you. And Neil, I know, because we know pretty much everything about each other, but there could be someone here that hasn't listened to me or you before. You never know. So where do they need to go, Neil?
Well, we're regulars on the Purely Arsenal podcast. We come on, we're lucky to go on Michael's Arsenal Above All podcast.
Yeah,
I'm lucky enough to come on to James's podcast, which is this one.
Busy man.
Occasionally, well, we're trying to get Rich's going a little bit. I've been talking to Melvin about it.
Yeah, we do.
The Over and Over, which Lee mentioned earlier. So there's a few sometimes on Ryan's show as well. So yeah, here and there, and sometimes I pop my head up in Twitter when it's safe to do so. But yeah,
good man. Yeah. All right. Well, thanks very much, everybody. Nearly been an hour and a half. But yeah, it's flown
thanks,
by.
Thanks
you guys so
much. Thank you, James. Brilliant, top man, mate.
Take care, everybody. Like, share, and subscribe, and we'll come back to you after the Bournemouth game. Take it easy, folks.